kayo'y nakikinig sa SBS Filipino. Pakinggan niyo pa ang kwento sa sbs.com.au/filipino.
Opisyal nang mapanood sa YouTube ang comedy drama short form series na Ina, ang anim na yugtong serye na likha ng Filipino-Australian writer and director na si Rachel Maxine Anderson. Sinusundan ng kwento ang Filipino-Australian TV producer na si Madeline na problemado sa trabaho at napilitang makisuyo sa kanyang inang si Gloria para maisalba ang palabas. Sa special preview screening sa Brisbane kamakailan, nakapanayam natin sa isang panel interview ang writer and director na si Rachel Maxine Anderson, kasama ang lead actress na si Trina Calimbayan-Giles, at ang mga producers ng serye na sina Ray Choi at Danielle Redford. Heto po't pakinggan natin.
Alright, thank you so much. This is absolutely an honor. Thanks so much for the invitation. So, the film premiered in the Cannes series. Not only is this film the only Australian series selected that year, and the sixth ever, it is also the first of its kind in the Cannes series that speaks to the narrative of Filipinos abroad. What does this mean to you as storytellers, actors, and creators and filmmakers?
It was incredible. It was an incredible honor to be. You just think that the way you grow up and being like who you are is just way too specific or niche that it's not going to connect internationally or anything like that. And it just felt so wild to be premiering this story halfway across the world, and for it to translate and for it to resonate with people regardless of where they were from. It was just amazing to be there, and to be there as well, and to just be there on the carpet together representing something that felt like it could never be in a position like that. So it was incredible, yes.
Bloody time, right? I think a lot of Filipinos would actually agree with me on that. What about you, Trina? What's this mean?
I just never thought it would happen. Just everything that you said, Rach, it was just to be recognized internationally, truly, like, felt like a dream come true, but also solidifying the incredible work that we did, like, that was fucking amazing, right? So, when she was fucking amazing, right? This one. You know, you showed me the first four episodes. I actually sat back and I was like, oh, that's why. That's why we're being recognized. Because it's brilliant and it has so much heart, and we just don't see stuff like this, like, ever. So, yeah.
I think it's incredible storytelling, really. I think there were so many stories to unpack there, and so many relatable moments there as well. You know, being a migrant myself, living in Brisbane for a long time, it takes a while for you to actually fit in. There are a lot of inconveniences trying to be the right person for the right job. And that's one of the scenes there that really stood out to me. You know, I think the film quite effectively created that beautiful, chaotic mix of everything that's toxic in the TV and, you know, hospitality work environments. And then one scene there where Tony said, you know, the alternative talent is not Japanese, it's white, but he gets the job done. Gianna, your character was an incredibly ambitious woman who obviously got the job done, unfortunately at your own expense. I think you and Lena did a great job in demonstrating the unnecessary hurt that comes with, you know, getting the right person with lived experience to get the right job. Did you sort of like draw from any personal experience in terms of, you know, the sense of compromising your own identity for the sake of, you know, ticking the box, so to speak?
Yeah, well, thank you for that question, Celeste. For sure, I guess that moment in the show really begs the question of how far someone would go to just get the job done, just to tick the box, just to go ahead, achieve the work. It kind of reminded me of quite fresh out of drama school, there was a brief going around for a show, which I won't mention, and quite a number of my non-diverse friends were going and submitting themselves for a diverse show, diverse characters, and it just absolutely baffled me. It gobsmacked me because, well, first of all, they didn't even consider it to be, you know, questionable. But for me, it was such a shocking moment. And it just, yeah, it made me really question how far someone would go to just get the job done. So I think it's so important to talk about it, keep each other accountable for it, but also honour and celebrate those people that come from those cultural backgrounds, because for too long we haven't heard their stories. So I really hope that, yeah, people in Australia and around the world takes that message from this incredible show that Rachel has written. So, yeah.
Thank you so much. And this is to everyone. So I thought it was a beautiful touch when that scene when Bobby found Madeline in the corner of this what seemed to be a kid set for play school. And I was like, oh, this is your favorite snack, you want to try? It's almost like they're swapping lunchboxes. I thought that was a beautiful touch, and the music box playing in the background towards the end. And that was also the same spot where Madeline and her mother had that heated encounter, the confrontation. Gloria asked her daughter why she was ashamed of her background, and Madeline speaks to the shame her mom might have had, which she obviously carried with her growing up. How real is self-loathing within the Filipino community here in Australia, I think? But we're also a very proud culture as well, with embrace like Filipino pride, but where do you think we draw the line in terms of like when it comes to expressing Filipino pride?
That's such a good question.
Tension there, yeah.
I think it feels very complex, and I think it is, and, you know, I was discussing this with my mum just recently. Like, there is such a resilience and a pride and a joy in Filipino communities, and it's something that I've always been drawn to my whole life. And, like, I can feel my stomach twisting, like, in this choice to either be honest or, like, whatever the alternatives to that. But I think I also picked up growing up that whiteness was so glamorized, I think, as well. And there was also this feeling like, oh, I was so lucky to be half. Like, so lucky to be half. And it makes you wonder about the half of you that isn't. And there's something really sad about internalizing this feeling that, like, you should be ashamed of this really big piece of you. And it's such a big piece of you because it's your mother, and your mother is the most, like, one of the most important people in your life, and you don't want to feel that way, but you're being taught to, and whether that be the environment that you are going to school in, or whatever it is, or in small ways, you know, like being at Filipino barbecues and just hearing a comment or just something like that, you know, being exposed to that so much and internalizing that. And you know, there's a reason that it's set in like a school, like a play school set. It's like ultimately an inner child story. You know, it's like an inner child wound of feeling confused and ashamed. And I think the story for me and for Maggie is realizing that you don't have to feel that way. It's like you're allowed to not feel that way because you don't know that you can claim that part of yourself because you've been told that it's better not to. And I feel very proud to be half-half. Mixed-mix. A mixed-up kid, you know?
Yeah. Oh, no, it was too beautifully said. Yeah, thank you.
Let's talk about your brilliant use of color theory. I really enjoyed it, especially in the first and second episode. You know, Maddie obviously wearing this orange top, which is supposed to be beautiful complementary color against the blue backdrop, but she's concealing it with the black jacket. And Sam, who's the star of the show, looks dull, right, you know, against the blue backdrop with his green apron. And it was only when Gloria stepped into the picture with her armor of a mustard yellow apron that the frame actually looked quite interesting and rich. Can you talk us through the process that you went through in designing that battlefield of the kitchen, the stare down particularly? That's when all the colors came out.
Shout out to our production designer, Marcel. And our entire art department, who worked so hard. Just incredible work. And Eliza. We can't talk about wardrobe without Eliza, our costume designer. We really played with colour in this one. I think Sam, he really blends into his environment. He's wearing blue, he's wearing like green, he blends right into the background. He's been there for 9 years, you know. And then it's Gloria who comes in with this joyous colour and she stands out. And yeah, like Maddie is wearing the same colour that is like her mum's colour, but she's hiding it and she's not proud of it. And in the last scene, she takes her jacket off and side by side, they're the same colour.
On the driveway.
Yeah. there are so many other little color things, but that was a big one for us.
That's beautiful. I really enjoyed that. Play with colors there. There was so much that you unpacked in such a short screen time. I'm just very curious. What was the hardest episode to film, and which one was your favorite?
Like looking
at every single one of them. This is an incredibly ambitious project for the scale of everything that we had, and I look at this and I see goodwill, generosity, the kind of resourcefulness that makes me so psyched to be a filmmaker over and over. So I think I'm sure we all have different moments. Probably the low point, and it's a high point now because it's funny, but we were really worried about that fire alarm because some of us on the crew had shot at that location before. Thank you, Griffith Film School, for such beautiful support. And had a fire alarm encounter. So we spent like months talking about this fire alarm. And then for circumstances, it went off during shooting. And so we evacuated our whole cast and crew. There was a split second where I thought, if we keep rolling, we could make the day, really good sound effects. And then I thought, Ray and I will go to jail if people burn, like, workplace health and safety. So there's like still some beers waiting across the street from the location at the pub where we just sent all our cast and crew while we like hung out with the fire trucks and figured it out. So I definitely like got down on my knees and kind of slapped the floor for a minute, but then it came back and it was all worth it. So that was probably my hardest episode. Final day of shooting. Final hour.
Wild. I also want to shout out our sound team, Mel and Chris, who were like, we need this audio recording. And they like recorded the whole thing.
No, they called me from the pub and they're like, go back in, press this button.
And we used it.
What about you, Ray? Which one was your favourite? Or the toughest one to put together?
We filmed everything based on location, so it wasn't, you know, in episodic order. I think my fave, actually, no, I was thinking about this. Hardest and favourite in a lot of ways started up at the top, so I think it was day one or day two we were filming that really emotional scene with Gloria and Maddie, and it was day two that we did that, and we were always mindful that, you know, we couldn't get around that with the schedule. We realised, well, it's not great, we would have loved to have eased our way into it, but that's just the way it is often with scheduling and locations. And so we were like, okay, let's just, you know, go in knowing that there's a couple of really big days for Lena and Tree to kind of be in that space with Rage. And I just remember I was on set when they were filming that, and I was just, I wasn't wearing masks because we were worried about COVID, and I had to, like, I could feel my tears running down my face. I had to hold my head back so I wasn't going to ruin a take with my sniffling. And it was, you know, I won't say it's the hardest, but it was, like, I guess, you know, as producers, we're always aware of so many different moving parts, and I think protecting the emotional heartbeat of a series and of a project, and all the kind of ensuring that, you know, everyone can do their best work in that space, that was big. And then also, yeah, one of my favourite, I guess, because it's just something Rachel was saying, which I think is so true about that conversation. It's like, you know, you're airing out things that you maybe wish you could say and don't say, and it's cathartic and amazing. So, yeah.
Follow up question, right? How it was decidedly a short form film to be launched on YouTube on Philippine Independence Day. Very exciting, actually. How important is it to you that it is made the way it was made, democratized, sweet and short? How important was that decision to me?
I would love to. Karen,
where are you?
Karen McNeil is our executive producer who's hiding here, and who very generously, Rach and I had been working on this project for a number of years. We knew each other, but we were at a guild party, actually, and we both had a year of the most horrific, painful loss. Rach had lost her father, and I had lost a number of family members, and so we're at a party with soundies and editors having fun around us, and we're in the corner talking about our grief and our therapy. And Inna started to grow from that day as we started to talk as well about the grief of living in unspoken conversations that still have an opportunity to be said, and unexplored identity. And so we were working on this for a number of years, but then we came to write Karen, and Karen very wisely knew from the beginning that Rach needed to be the author of this story, and that short form was a way that we as a team could protect and create the space and the tension for that. And it was a decision that took, you know, Karen has years of experience that we don't have and years of foresight, and gifted us this format. It's pretty great, but grateful for that.
Short form, I mean, it doesn't even feel right to say it's short because it, yeah, but it is such a wonderful way to work with people and build a process that you're proud of. And then the other thing that I love about the way that we're releasing this is that it's so accessible. Thinking about the audience that we want to make this for, that are underserved, we want them to be able to find it and see it without a paywall in the way. And that's pretty, yeah, having YouTube does that so well. And especially right now when everyone's flooded with choice. Just making it easy for them.
It's a brilliant idea. Do we have time for one more question? Just one last, very important. Love the scene. One of my most favorite scenes, obviously, is storytelling using the halo halo. Really made me cry. Rachel, were you one of those people who just take to heart the sequence of the ingredients in making your halo halo? And when was the time? Take us to the time, the moment when you realized a halo halo is the perfect metaphor to speak of the Filipino condition.
I was actually watching a documentary about different, like, Asian desserts. And they did this, like, segment, I suppose, on halo halo. And they were talking about all the different colonial influences, and the program kind of was so bubbly and, like, vibrant and, like, colourful, and, like, it was so weird to hear them talk about war and trauma and so much pain and in such a, like, flippant way. And it made me, I was like, whoa, okay, so many people have to die for this dish to exist. There's so much pain in this dish. And I didn't realize that was the case, you know? And it made me think about myself, and I was like,
so much history has had to happen for me to exist, for me to be here. So, the war, just the Spanish colonizing the Philippines, just all of these things have had to happen for me to exist. And yeah, I think I'm getting mixed up even just answering the question, because it's just to have eaten something your whole life and to not realize that. It was really wild. And it's literally translates to mix.
Mm.
And yeah, I just couldn't let go of that. And it's weird, as I was editing the show, because I edited it, it's weird, it's you write something almost on a subconscious level, and then here I was listening to Gloria tell this story, and she pours the milk into the pohelo, and it seeps down, and I found myself tilting my head and realizing, just like Maddie does in the show, but months after we shot it, that the Filipinos were taught to be American, and they had no choice but to assimilate. And despite that, they've come out, they love this dish and they're so proud of it, and they choose joy. They always choose joy. There's so much resilience and joy in Filipino people, and that's why I respect the community so much, and I'm so drawn to those spaces, because I feel so comfortable and so accepted. And I don't even know how to finish what I was saying, because I've just lost my trail. But
it's a beautiful line you wrote there. It's not in the spirit of this dish to judge this mixture, and I will forever remember that whenever I eat my mahalo. Big hand for our panel.
Comment, sundan ang SBS Filipino sa Facebook.